PPI.org.
This is Disability and Progress, where we bring you insights into ideas about and discussions on disability topics. My name is Sam. I'm the host of this show. Thanks so much for tuning in. Charlene Dahl is my research woman. Good evening, Charlene.
I'm here. Don't be shy. I'm standing right here.
Just making sure. If you want to be a part of our email list and find out what's coming on, you can email me at disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com and we will let you know what is coming up each week. And if you have suggestions or think there's a great topic we've never covered, we've covered an awful lot. But sometimes topics bear to be covered again. Give us a shout at disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com. Well, Charlene, this month is National Protect Your Hearing Month, as I understand it. And we have Kate McGinley and Dr. Heather, and you'll have to help me with the last name. I think it's Maluk. Silent. Is there an A at the end?
Nope. M-A-L-Y-U-K. Maluk.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Did I butcher that? I apologize.
That's okay. Everybody does. No problem.
Excellent. It's good to be used to that, I guess. Tonight, Kate is the co-founder and chief growth officer of Tuned, and Dr. Heather Maluk is Tuned's head of audiology. And so I want to just thank you both for coming on. I appreciate you coming on Protect Your Hearing Month. I do think this is a really important topic. I think for all those who are now tuned into this program via radio or their smartphone with our smart app or on your Alexa device or computer, you do know if you're listening how important that is. So I want to start out by thanking you both, but I want to start with Dr. Maluk. Can you give us some history about your background and how you got involved with this field?
Sure, I'd love to. Thanks so much for having us on your show. This mm-hmm. is great. I am an audiologist, as mentioned. I'm located in Northeast Ohio, near Akron, Ohio. And that's where I'm from as well. My background is as a professional musician. I grew up as a musician. I have a degree in music history. I worked for many years as a professional musician. And as I was starting a graduate degree, a master's degree in ethnomusicology, I had a reaction, a gut feeling that it wasn't for me and that I wasn't really involved in my life's calling.
Aww.
From there, I sort of randomly found audiology, to be honest. I saw an online advertisement for a local doctoral program, and I went for it. Mm-hmm. And that was in 2008 to 2009, that school year. Since then, I have fallen deeper in love with audiology every year that I practice, and I've become specialized in several areas. My main specialty is music audiology, but I also specialize in tinnitus management and alternative amplification and care, as well as industrial hearing conservation, just to name a few. So that's a short background on me.
Can you give us a definition of music audiology for all those who are like, what's that?
Sure, no problem. Music audiology is a really rare and highly specialized sector of the audiology world, and it focuses greatly on hearing conservation, so hearing protection as it relates to music industry professionals, but it also focuses on the particular needs of music industry personnel, or who I call talented listeners, when it comes to amplification of hearing loss and management of hearing disorders. It's a rare enough specialty that right now in the United States, there are only about 5 to 10 of us who practice this specialty, and there's one in Canada as well.
So you have a niche.
It is a little bit of a niche, yes.
So let's talk about this a little bit longer. This is Protect Your Hearing Month, and I want to talk about protecting your hearing. So is this really a problem?
Well, yes and no. It is National Protect Your Hearing Month, and if you didn't know, it's actually Audiology Awareness Month as well.
I did not know that.
Yes. So we have two special things going on this month, but it is National Protect Your Hearing Month, which I love. And it's all about raising awareness of sound-induced hearing loss and its prevention. And we know this is prevalent in the United States. There was a data analysis completed a few years ago from NHANES, which is the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey. And it showed that about 25% of adults in the U.S. exhibit signs of noise-induced or sound-induced hearing loss. And we also know that sound exposure can lead to disorders of hearing, such as tinnitus or ringing in the ears. So really, this month is about preventing those hearing disorders too. Now, in terms of hearing protection being a problem, it's not necessarily a problem. What I find is that most individuals are very undereducated about the topic. It's not really something that comes to mind readily. When we are exposed to hazardous sound, it's not like our ears bleed or we have some kind of sign that injury is happening. And many people don't realize that they have an injury from sound exposure until it becomes quite severe, because this type of hearing loss can happen very gradually over time. Additionally, I find that individuals who use hearing protection, they often forget a very important step in the process, which is an annual hearing evaluation and consultation with an audiologist to ensure that they are actually properly protecting themselves. So when we say an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, it's very, very true in the realm of protecting your hearing.
Can you tell me what are some of the most common things that are hard on hearing?
Sure. Yes, and actually this ties right into National Protect Your Hearing Month. It certainly is about noise, but there are other factors as well. I think many people think that aging in and of itself, getting old, causes hearing loss, but that's not necessarily the case. There are essentially five categories of things that can be hard on hearing. And those are things like hazardous sound exposure, certainly genetic predisposition to hearing loss, poor blood flow, so things that would affect your vascular health, your blood flow, certain disease processes and viruses, and then also life-saving medications, heavy medications like chemotherapy.
Oh, so I had no idea that was hard on hearing. Really?
It is. Yes, it can be, especially very high pitches of hearing. And and certainly we often see older individuals with hearing loss because they've had more time for something to happen to their ears. But aging alone certainly does not cause hearing loss.
Fascinating. That is fascinating. So what is considered a hearing problem or, you know, hearing loss?
To put it very plainly, I would say it's any measurable or perceived impairment as it relates to listening to sound. So not just hearing a sound, but sometimes it has to do with understanding the sound. There are individuals who don't necessarily have measurable hearing loss on a hearing test, but they might be dealing with something like auditory processing disorder or some other disorder of hearing. So yeah, I would say any measurable or perceived impairment as it relates to listening to sound.
So when my first son was born, when he was a baby and toddler, he had a substantial amount of ear infections. And I was so concerned about and worried that he would have hearing issues from that. It just seemed like he had, one every month almost. And there was some people that would say, yes, get tubes. No, don't get tubes. Do you have a feeling on this, or what is your thoughts?
Well, ear infections are quite they're common in children, but I should say they are more common in children than they are in adults. And that's for anatomical reasons and can be from environmental reasons and other things. In terms of tubes, and whether or not those should be used, it depends on the child and what the ear, nose, and throat physician thinks and recommends, because every child's very different. So it's hard to make a general statement about that. But I would say if a mom is listening to this and thinking about it, it's okay to ask really detailed questions to your ear, nose, and throat physician and trust their guidance in that process.
And so let's talk about if somebody has had a substantial amount of ear infections, and even maybe as an adult, and they have a hearing deficit, and their doctor says, I wouldn't recommend hearing aids for you because you've had so many ear infections and you're prone to them. What will we get into later about, is there something that is an option for them?
Yes, I think there's a couple of things. There are different types of ear infections. Mm-hmm. So there are middle ear infections that happen behind the eardrum, and there are outer ear infections that happen in the ear canal. When you look at different types of amplification, if someone needs amplification or hearing aids or another device, I don't think there would be a situation where it would not be recommended. Maybe a certain style would not be recommended. And we can get into that later in terms of different styles of earpieces and things like that. It's kind of funny that you bring this up, because I had an appointment this morning with an adult who has recurrent ear infections. And we did talk about different styles of hearing aids and other devices that would work for her, because her hearing tends to fluctuate. Ah. So when she's in the middle of an ear infection, it will be worse. And she has actually a couple of audiologists she works with, because she's in different parts of the country. So it's interesting you bring that up. Those individuals do have different concerns in terms of amplification.
All right. Can you talk about tinnitus?
Yes, tinnitus.
Tinnitus.
Sure I can. Yes, and I let me start by saying, for anyone listening thinking, is that how it's pronounced? Some people say tinnitus and some people say tinnitus, and both are acceptable. You can use either or either, whatever you like. Most audiologists will say tinnitus, and especially in the U.S., we tend to say tinnitus. So just as a starting point, you're not wrong if you say tinnitus. It's just not what the health professionals say. But the most basic definition of it, if someone's not aware, it's a perceived sound in the ears or in the head that doesn't have an external source. And when we look at the data in the U.S., tinnitus affects roughly 50 million adults in our country. And of those individuals, about 20 million, so a little less than half, find it bothersome. And then about 2 million find it debilitating. And so it can be in many forms. It can be ringing in the ears. It can be chirping. It can be a buzzing sound. And sometimes an individual can say it's in my left ear. Oh, it's in my right ear. Some say, oh, it sounds like it's in my head. I'm not sure where it's located. But that's what tinnitus is.
And I have heard a lot of people talk about it like a ringing, like you said, or a high-pitched. And it's caused by...
It can be caused by a myriad of things, including sound exposure. We see it quite often. It's one of the first and foremost service-connected conditions for our military, actually, tinnitus and hearing loss, often from sound exposure. It can also be caused by certain medications, certain disease processes, viruses. Sometimes it's idiopathic, meaning there isn't a cause that can be pinpointed. Sometimes it's what we call somatosensory, or the lay term would be mechanical, meaning it's coming from the neck or the jaw. And that's where someone like a physical therapist, you know, would get involved for adjustments and things like that, and therapy. So there isn't one cause. And what makes that complicated is there isn't one therapy or cure that works for everyone. It's a very diverse condition.
So my understanding is it's not necessarily a constant thing, that it can come and go, yes?
For some people, it can come and go, and that's what we would call intermittent tinnitus. For many people, it is constant, or what we would say is persistent tinnitus, meaning they have it 24/7.
Ugh. I can't imagine. I don't want to imagine. So you said a substantial or different treatment, some maybe physical therapy. Is there any type of, vitamin or any type of thing that people generally take that could help?
Not at the moment. There are many things being researched right now, different vitamin formulas and pharmaceuticals. The primary therapies right now for tinnitus involve retraining the tinnitus through sound therapy, often in conjunction with a therapist that would practice something like cognitive behavioral therapy. So it's really about retraining certain parts of the brain. Many people will get an over-the-counter product from CVS or Walgreens or wherever that says it can take tinnitus away. It's not, many of those are not proven effective. However, the reason why I wanted to bring it up is I am a bit of a believer in the placebo effect.
Yes. So psychologically, if they think it's doing good, it might be doing good.
So I would say to somebody, you know, if you're doing something and it's working for you, then it's working for you. As long as you're not hurting another part of your body by doing it, then, you know, talk about it with your audiologist and maybe that's all you need. What I have found with my tinnitus patients is there are truly no two alike. And the therapy process with each patient is very different.
What about playing like music or stories or something to try to cover up the sound?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That would be called an interesting sound. When we talk about using sound for tinnitus, that would be an interesting sound, meaning you're probably going to listen to it and pay attention to it. So that would be one type of sound you could use. Another type of sound would be an uninteresting sound. So maybe a white noise generator, or having the sound of, I had a patient recently use actually a YouTube video that was ambient sound from a coffee shop. And he said it really helped him when he was reading to take his mind off the tinnitus and focus on what he was reading. So you're absolutely right. Those interesting sounds can be used, and then uninteresting sounds can be used as well.
Mm. You told us a little bit ago that old age is not necessarily just a given that one will lose their hearing. So do you have statistics on like general ages on, you know, how bad a hearing loss is, you know, the general population that has hearing losses over certain ages?
That's a good question. And I mean, certainly it's kind of tough to make generalizations about age groups, especially because that kind of data collection at that kind of scale can be a little difficult. But there are statistics about this. For example, the CDC estimates that about 15% of school-age children have some degree of hearing loss. There was a nice article published earlier this year in The Lancet that showed that hearing loss was the third largest cause of disability in global disease burden. And there was a nice graphic in that article that looked at hearing loss by decade of life. And essentially what it showed is a very small percentage of the global population having hearing loss at birth, to an almost 50% prevalence for individuals above the age of 95. And it was a bar graph. And all the way up from birth to 95, it was sort of a steady increase in prevalence.
Wow. I believe I saw a statistic or a percentage about 85 decibel threshold of sound Above that is considered too loud. 85 is considered too loud. Help us with this number and compare it to how we would know what that means.
Sure. So 85 dB, or what an audiologist would say is dBA, but I'm just going to throw that out there, but we can say dB for right now. But when we talk about the 85 dB threshold, we are referencing regulation in the U.S. And so I'll just give you an example. In certain places in Europe and in certain provinces in Canada, their scales start at 80 dB. But for us here, ours is 85. And, you know, this is often used as an action level or a level at which criteria starts for preventing noise-induced hearing loss. And the specific level is referenced by both the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, so that's OSHA, mm-hmm. and the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, that's NIOSH. And it's used in reference to employees in the industrial workforce. So in other words, people who are exposed to hazardous noise at their workplaces, like factory workers. We, though, can use these safety scales to influence our day-to-day decisions about hearing safety, even though those scales were designed for individuals in those louder work settings, meaning they're based on, you know, a 40-hour work week over a full career. So sounds above 85 can certainly injure hearing, but it's not dependent only on the dB level, but also the length of exposure time. So it's sort of like being exposed to sunshine, mm-hmm. where if you're in sun for a long amount of time, you might need a higher SPF than if you were there for a short amount of time. It's sort of similar with hearing and noise. So just to use the NIOSH scale as an example, that scale protects about 92% of the population. And it says that 85 dB is safe for about 8 hours without hearing protection in place, meaning you can be in 85 dB. And if you're there for more than 8 hours, you risk getting a noise-induced hearing loss.
How would you know what 85 mm-hmm. dB would be, though?
So an 85 dB signal might be something like a small lawnmower, riding lawnmower. You know, if you go for a larger, more powerful tractor, you might be up to a 95 dB signal, to give a rough estimate. Now, people listening to this wondering about their own levels, NIOSH, who I'm talking about right now, NIOSH, they have a wonderful app that works on Apple products. It's called the NIOSH Sound Level Meter app. So anyone with an iPad or an iPhone can download this app, and it's really fairly accurate, and they can actually measure what they're exposed to and see if they're at risk.
Tell us where to find that again.
So if you have an Apple product, an iPhone or an iPad, you can go into your app store and search the NIOSH Sound Level Meter. And NIOSH is N-I-O-S-H. Mm-hmm. So as an example,
okay,
85 is the starting point. You know you might be safe for 8 hours there. Well, every 3 dB that you add to that number, your safety time is cut in half. So I mentioned, 88 dB would be safe for 4 hours, 91 would be safe for 2, et cetera. So imagine if you're on a really, you know, large, powerful tractor mowing your lawn, and you might be at 95. Well, according to NIOSH, you're really only safe for about a half hour, give or take. So if you have a lot of mowing to do, and you know you're going to be on there for a couple hours, it's time to use your hearing protection. So that's how you use these safety scales. You don't necessarily need to say, well, you know, it's 87 dB, so I need to put in earplugs and put muffs over them. It's really about your length of exposure and the dB level.
But you could if you wanted to protect yourself.
You could if you wanted to. Yes.
I always wonder about those fireworks that people love to see. And they are awfully loud. And
yes.
Many people bring their little tiny babies to those. And I'm like, no.
Yes, I always love seeing the babies in earmuffs. And, you know, in 2021, one thing we talk about with sound exposure that I think a lot of people forget about, but there's increased awareness, is individuals wearing things like AirPods and headphones all day, you know, doing remote jobs, maybe commuting to an in-person job. So when we think about sound exposure now, it's not just about outside sources that maybe are far away from you. It's things that we're putting on our heads and in our ears as well.
All right. So I want to, I'm going to ask the question. So if an adult, because I had this question put to me, has had many ear infections, and his actual doctor said, you shouldn't get hearing aids, that they wouldn't be good. What can he do? Exactly what, because he needs something. What should he be doing? Yeah. And should he be getting a second opinion? Should he be, you know, and I don't know which kind of ear infections he had. But I'm guessing maybe middle ear, if the doctor is telling him not to get any.
Sure. Well, of course, I don't know this person. I haven't seen his test results. And I don't want to say the wrong thing, but my gut reaction would be to get a second opinion. Even if he wants to email me and get a second opinion, that seems a little odd to me, that if someone is perceiving a hearing loss and needs amplification, that they would be told not to do that. And so that I would seek out a second opinion.
All right. Excellent. And how can people contact you?
My email address is Heather, my first name, at tunedcare.com.
Heather, H-E-A-T-H-E-R, at tunedcare, T-U-N-E-D?
Yes.
.com.
Yes, tunedcare.com.
Tunedcare.com. All right. Excellent. Thank you. I appreciate that. Are you finding that with the whole, you know, we for like 2 years now, there's been a substantial amount of people that had a big change. Children were out of school because of the pandemic. They had headphones. One of the things that I was instructed for my child is they must have headphones to connect to their iPad so they could be in class, even though I found that you could just keep your headphones off you and be unplugged and play your iPad out loud, and maybe that's a little nicer on your ears. But as a worker, too, that, you know, I'm under headphones teaching my clients, you know, through Zoom and whatnot, has there been a much larger hearing loss and or hearing issues now, are you finding?
Well, I'm not sure if we know yet in relation to COVID and being home and using headphones and that kind of thing. I don't know that that data has specifically been collected yet. I do know there have been studies done on earbud use, for example. Mm. Showing that individuals, 87% of individuals, if they're listening and there's some background noise around them, they're listening at unsafe levels. And we know the same is true for children. I think we are noticing clinically, so what I'm seeing clinically and what I'm hearing from patients is that there's a heightened concern for hearing.
Gotcha.
Meaning people are contacting me and saying, my employer has told me I need earphones or headphones, and I'm working from home and I'm on meetings 8 or 10 hours a day, and I feel fatigued. My hearing feels fatigued at the end of the day. Well, that can be a sign of injury happening. So again, this is where the annual hearing checkup comes into play, and education from an audiologist about what device might be appropriate, again, for the length of time they're listening and what their needs are. There are also individuals who feel fatigued at the end of the day because they actually might need some kind of amplification over their computer or through their headphones that would help them do their job a little better, help them focus a little better. So I'm seeing that too in terms of listening fatigue. So that's a good question. I do assume that kind of data will be collected as we keep going through the pandemic.
All right. I want to give you a scenario because I think a lot of people ask themselves, how do I know when I have a hearing loss? Short of, you know, if you haven't had a hearing check. So this happens in my family. Somebody's in one room, somebody's in another. You just say something thinking, of course you should be able to hear me from the other room. No, you can't. And or somebody's walking away mumbling and not looking at you. You can't hear them very well. You're saying, what? So how do you know if somebody's asking too much or if somebody, you know, needs to get a hearing check?
Well, I think I have some specific thoughts, but let me start by saying, in the world that we are in the families we are in the friend groups we are in, it never hurts to have what are called good communication strategies. It's a way to care for other people, you know, to face someone when you're talking to them, to make sure they know the context of what you're saying, to speak up and speak clearly and give space to your words and not rush and not mumble. So that's sort of just a first general statement for the whole world. You know, just good communication strategies. Now, if we're talking about when do people really realize that they have hearing loss? Some individuals are very self-aware and they know when they have hearing loss by realizing that they're truly not hearing sound as clearly as they once did. And I'm not talking about someone being in the other room, you know, washing dishes, and maybe the person with hearing loss is in the basement or something. Even individuals with normal hearing would have a tough time with that. So there are people who realize that even in close, what would be deemed clear conversation, that they're having some issues, or perhaps they're missing out on pieces of information in conversation. They're realizing they're missing chunks of information. Perhaps they are finding themselves not getting together with family and friends because listening is becoming too fatiguing. Perhaps they're starting to consider, oh my gosh, am I being forgetful? But maybe they just never heard things clearly in the first place. So that's one example. Others find out that they have hearing loss by loved ones letting them know that they have noticed they are missing things. And still others notice it with music or other jobs or hobbies that require listening. A perfect example is I had someone in my clinic the other day who is an ecologist. And he said to me, I need help because I am paid to listen for certain bird calls. You know, and he couldn't hear them anymore. Aww. So everyone's hearing profile is unique. And there are no two people on earth who, quote, hear the same, even if their hearing loss is identical on a hearing test. And you could have two people with the same hearing loss and one is very aware of it. And the other one needed his friend to tell him, you know, that it was time to take a step forward.
Right. I'd like to talk about the new system that you guys are about the tuned system, but I'm going to take a short break first, and we'll come back, and we'll talk about that.
Programming on KFAI is supported by the Community Action Partnership of Ramsey and Washington County's Energy Assistance Program. The Energy Assistance Program helps low-income households pay a portion of their heating bills. Community Action of Ramsey, Washington assists Ramsey and Washington County residents with home energy payments, energy crises, and emergency furnace repair. They also offer referrals to the Home Weatherization Program. More information about how to apply at 651-645-6470 or at caprw.org.
And you're tuned to KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. My name is Sam. I'm the host of this show. We are talking to both Dr. Mal Yuk. I'm afraid every time I pronounce his name now. And we are also going to bring in Kate McGinley. Kate, I want to bring you in too. Can you...
Hi, Sam.
Hi. Finally, huh? Kate is a co-founder and chief growth officer of Tuned. So can you start out by telling me what Tuned is?
Sure. So Tuned is a platform for both patients and audiologists. And today, Tuned gives access to patients. It gives patients access to education, and it gives them transparency throughout their hearing health journey. So patients can schedule a telehealth visit with their audiologist. They can access a marketplace of audiologist-vetted OTC products, but there's no pressure towards a device or this one type of solution that we often see in the world today. There's no insurance hassles either. We've eliminated all of it. So it's really a place where if you want the most comprehensive selection for your hearing health, you can go to Tuned and receive expert care to guide you to the solutions that will work for you.
So you're kind of saying that Tuned gives you all the options that are on the board.
That's right. Along with the expertise of the audiologist, such as Dr. Maliuk, to guide you in those decisions and support your journey.
So how did you come up with this system?
So that's a great question. So our founder, Danny, personally suffers from hearing loss. He served in the military on a tank. And that exposure, as Dr. Maliuk mentioned, caused hearing loss. Danny went to several audiologists, and every time he was told that there was nothing that they could really do for him. So he actually launched a headphone company first to solve his hearing loss. But what he realized was no two people have the exact same hearing profile. And so if you wanted to solve hearing problems at scale, you need to move away from the device-only model. He connected with Heather, and from the start, he's really championed an unbiased approach rooted in clinical expertise. That was really the seed for Tune, Danny's own personal hearing loss experience.
And you helped with this.
I did. So I joined as a co-founder a little bit later. I spent my career in healthcare. I actually started as a patient care technician on a hem-onc stem cell transplant unit.
Oh, wow.
I was working full-time and pursuing my education. And I remember I looked at a patient's EMR on a night shift one night, you know, all the information about the patient in the computer. And I just decided I wanted to make it my life's work to empower the front line, the patients and the providers with technology. I had a little bit of a background in technology.
Mm-hmm.
So since then, I've worked with organizations just trying to help reinvent healthcare with that goal in mind. So when Danny approached me and shared what the Tune team was doing, I just went all in. I have family members who are bilateral hearing aid wearers. I have one with single-sided deafness. So this was, to me, the Tuned mission is close. It's very close to my heart.
Mm. Yes. Well, Kate, I guess, you know, I think I saw in the material that talked about up to 75% of people that tend to leave their clinic dissatisfied with their choices of options for hearing devices. So what does that mean exactly?
Sure. So we see it very similar to what Danny experienced. So an individual notices that they're having hearing challenges, maybe not hearing loss, maybe it's tinnitus. Maybe it's they're noticing they're overstimulated by sound, but they recognize that there's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because today's world, the model is so oriented towards hearing aids alone as the solution, many of these folks walk out empty-handed. Hearing aids are expensive. They're $6,000 often. They're very expensive. And so it's a real challenge when you don't quite have enough of a problem to justify that price, but you do want to solve the problem that you have. Another issue that we see is that many major insurance plans don't cover your hearing health. So even if you go into your PCP for your annual visit, you're probably not going to have your hearing checked. You might be asked about it, but will your hearing actually be checked to ensure that you are healthy? It's unlikely because there's no coverage for it today. And so it's a practice model that really doesn't benefit the patient and it doesn't benefit the provider.
So if one has their hearing check, what's a statistic they should hear or see? Like what are the numbers they should come back with that tells them they don't have a hearing loss?
I can jump in for this one.
I will defer to Heather because I love clinical answers given my career started clinically. So Heather, go ahead.
If someone is going into a clinic because they are perceiving an issue, then there is an issue there. And so that's where they need to have a good relationship with a clinician to get to the bottom of it. If their clinician says to them, you don't have a problem, I do take issue with that. You know, whether it needs to be a referral to another provider or another type of testing, I don't think that scenario is a good one. And I hope it wouldn't be a common one. Now, if someone is perceiving no issues and they go to an audiologist and they find that their hearing is what we call within normal limits on a hearing test, then it's time to talk to the audiologist about protection. You know, when individuals go see dentists, certainly they're hoping that they don't have cavities. They might have something that needs to be worked on. But when we go to a dentist, we learn about protecting our teeth and keeping them healthy. It is the same with an audiologist as well. So I hope that answers the question a little bit. But if someone's perceiving an issue, there is an issue there.
Kate, you talked about how people so often just get they get their problem addressed by devices, choices of devices, and that's not necessarily how Tuned works. But I can't imagine how else you address something as far as like a certain device that might work better for someone as opposed to someone else. So how does Tuned differ with that?
Great question, Sam. So the way we look at it, it all starts with that individual person's hearing profile. There's a lot of value in devices. In fact, the innovation, there are so many wonderful options on the market, but it's all anchored in that person's personal hearing profile, that person's goals, that person's lifestyle, and that person's budget. So when a patient comes in and they can have that conversation with an audiologist, they can decide that maybe this device is what I want when I work from home, but when I'm spending time with my family, I don't want or don't need a device. Or there are some amazing devices that are app-based, right? So they're informational devices, if you will. And you can use that for some rehabilitation activities. Mm-hmm. You can use some of these products to adjust to the different sounds that are in your environment, different loved ones' voices. And so there's just amazing technology out there, but depending on the goals of that individual, it's really about what treatment plan is right for them. And that may or may not include a device. And that is very different than the model today. Today, the model it's almost device or bust. We think that we can create meaningful change for the patient and for the audiologist by saying hearing care is highly personal. We want to offer all of the options that are clinically validated, right? There's a catch there. We're not just going to put anything on. Clinically validated, and empower you with the choice to do what is right for you under the guidance of an audiologist.
So
that's the difference with Tuned.
So can hearing actually be improved without devices if you are already experiencing a hearing loss?
I'll take this one, Kate.
It
depends. I mean, it really depends on what's causing the hearing loss. There are some forms of hearing loss that can be medically treated. So on the Tuned platform, when someone gets on the platform and does what we're calling a hearing workup, we utilize a really rigorous process for finding what we call red flags. So these would be things that would warrant a referral to be seen in person by an audiologist or an ear, nose, and throat physician. So perhaps someone gets on the website and they say, well, I suddenly lost hearing in one ear yesterday or something like that. That's mm-hmm. a red flag. They would need to go have medical treatment before moving forward. In terms of hearing loss that cannot be medically treated, then typically amplification is the best option. And at this point in time, there are research groups working on pharmacological agents or medical procedures to reverse hearing loss. There are also groups that are working on certain auditory training exercises to try and reverse the perception of hearing loss.
Ah.
And it could be that we will see some really good options in our lifetime, but they just simply don't quite exist yet. But I do have hope for the future.
It's the little hairs inside your ear that, as they get damaged or whatever, that causes the hearing loss, correct?
Yes, for many types of hearing loss, it is the hair cells, the cilia in the inner ear that are experiencing the damage or the injury. And that type of hearing loss is called sensory neural, and it's the most common form of hearing loss.
So is there anything out there that's trying to, like, regrow the hairs or anything that they're trying to do to try to regenerate that?
Yes, there are groups actually working on that. They are. And they I believe there has been some success in animal models. I might be a little bit behind on that research. Last time I looked into it, I know there were stem cells being used. And there were regeneration studies going on. And I wonder about that, especially in animal models. An animal can't say, you know, okay, my cell is back, but man, it sounds weird. Right. I'm not sure when we'll see that translated into human subjects.
So, Kate, what exactly do you all do for the company, for Tuned?
Sure. So part of my job is to really think about how we can impact the care delivery model. Mm-hmm. And so that is making sure that the patient is having a great journey, making sure the audiologist is having a great journey and a great experience. But the bigger piece that I think about is how can we change hearing health for up to 1 billion people? And that's really my mandate at the company. How do we scale this model to a larger, just a larger audience? And so the way I'm thinking about that is taking this beyond the walls of the clinic. Heather talked earlier about the fact that so many folks nowadays have this mandate to wear headphones or headsets at work and at school. And so I'm starting the conversation with businesses and starting to create visibility that, you know, quote unquote, normal hearing, it's actually in the minority. Everyone has a unique hearing profile. And so how can these organizations provide the tools for their employees or, you know, staff, anybody in their community to get proactive about their hearing health and create an environment that works for their hearing? That's really what my focus is.
And have you had people give you feedback on this platform?
We have. I have to say, I've just been incredibly humbled by the response that we have had. I'll share that we launched just a soft launch to audiologists on October 4th, and it's now the 28th. We are now the third largest group of audiologists in the world, behind only the United Kingdom's NHS and the VA here in the States. So it's just been unbelievable. And on the patient side, I'm so proud of the work that the audiologists who have decided to join are doing. Heather, this is a bit of a funny story, but Heather actually had a patient ask for her hand in marriage the other week because the model is just so different than what patients are used to. It's unbiased. The patient comes in, they can talk with an audiologist about their personal concerns. And when they start to get recommendations, they can trust that there's no biased pressure towards a sale. There's no commission structure. Audiologists are just paid for their time, and it's paid by the patient. So there's There's no incentive there. And on top of that, the way we put brands on the website, we vet them clinically. So you can't pay to have your, you know, device or your brand on Tune. We aren't paid by, you know, selling. We're not paying the audiologist by selling a ton of devices. That's not how Tune works. We have built this so that it is completely unbiased, so the patient can have that conversation, make selections that they feel are appropriate for them, and leave knowing that truly this is the best of what is out there.
I usually take a little time to give my research person that assists me some time to ask questions if she has any in regard to this. And so, Charlene, I just want to offer you the opportunity to ask any if you have any.
You know, both speakers have been so informative. I really don't. I'm one of these people that every once in a while gets wax in their ears and can't hear anything. And it's kind of interesting when they, it feels like a champagne cork coming out of my ear, you know. But this sounds like a model that really will be helpful for people.
That's the goal. You know, I just think I really appreciate, as someone who, like I said, I have members of my family with these hearing challenges, and just seeing the work that the audiologist can do for patients. I mean, it's inspiring. It's so wonderful to see someone have that kind of an impact on another human being.
Should people get a yearly hearing check, or should they wait till they notice something? Should everyone get a hearing check? How often should someone get their hearing checked?
The recommendation is annually, and many school-age children have annual screenings in school, but everyone should have a family audiologist, the same as, again, it's like going to see a dentist, honestly, to make sure everything is healthy, working properly, that no hearing loss is being caused by noise exposure. An annual visit with your friendly local audiologist, especially now that a platform like Tuned is making it so easy.
Well, Kate and Dr. Malyuk, I'd like to offer you this final time for any comments that you have, and also how people can get a hold of you and find out more about Tuned.
Sure. My final comment would be, I think, looking at this whole conversation and thinking about my 10 plus years in audiology, that there really is no better time for ears than the period we're living in, both from the aspect of being an audiologist and the aspect of being a patient. Audiologists have so many tools, including this one, at their disposal, where they can see a wide variety. They can really see and serve the true diversity of the population and meet the needs where they are. And from the patient side, there have never been more options for hearing protection and amplification. I can be reached, like I said earlier, at heather@tunedcare.com. I welcome emails, comments, questions, and I know Kate does too.
I do. And so for me, it's really about, I'd like to encourage everybody who's listening to create visibility around their hearing. This is a really important topic, and we're at a great time. So if you have hearing challenges, there are solutions out there. You should advocate for yourself and speak up, because there are so many people out there who are advocating for you. It's just that visibility that really makes a difference. You can obviously reach us at tunedcare.com. With patients, one of the things that we're seeing is a lot of them are already asking their audiologist if they are using Tuned. So that's an option. And if not, I know Heather and I are very active on social media, Heather on Facebook, and I am on LinkedIn all the time. So they can look us up on the Tune pages on both Facebook and LinkedIn, and we'd love to hear from them.
Well, thank you, ladies, for coming on. I really appreciate that. And, you know, this is definitely an important topic, as I value my hearing very much. you know, as somebody who wears headphones a lot. So thank you again.
And good luck.
Thank you.
Good luck with the product.
Thank you very much.
All right, and this is KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. This has been Disability and Progress. The views expressed on this show are not necessarily those of KFAI or its board of directors. Tonight, we've been talking about National Protect Your Hearing Month. This was about also the platform Tuned. We were speaking with Kate McGinley, who is the chief officer and co-founder of Tuned, and also Dr. Heather Malyuk. And Dr. Malyuk is the Tuned's head of audiologist. And of course, you feel free to keep pledging. Thank you for listening. Good night.
KFAI.org.